Okay, welcome everyone to our weekly study group. This is Corinne Zupko and Clary Mom Premier, and we're here to facilitate where we left off last week. And Clary is also manning the chat on her future, so if anybody has to stay on mute and wants to ask a question or make a comment, feel free to do so there. So let's start our time together tonight with a few moments together spent in silence. And this is from one of the final lessons in the workbook. It's lesson 362 to 365. This holy instant would I give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you. Certain that your direction gives us peace. And if we need a word to help, he will give it to us. If we need a thought, that will the Holy Spirit also give. And if we need but stillness and a tranquil open mind, these are the gifts we will receive of him. We're asking the Holy Spirit to be in charge by our request. So simply taking a few more mindful breaths. And with the love in your heart and the light in your mind, coming together to our perception of this time and place. So welcome everybody again. Before we dive right into our reading tonight, does anybody have any general questions or comments about the course before we start? Okay. We left off, we'll actually begin on part 15 in the Manual for Teachers in the very back of the Course in Miracles book. In the Foundation for Inner Peace version, it is page 38. Again, part 15 is each one to be judged in the end. And tonight, so Clary can keep manning the chat, actually, Christy and I will be reading. So I guess I'll go ahead and begin. Is each one to be judged in the end? Indeed, yes. No one can escape God's final judgment. Who could flee forever from the truth? But the final judgment will not come until it is no longer associated with fear. One day, each one will welcome it, and on that very day it will be given him. He will hear his sinlessness proclaimed around and around the world, setting it free as God's final judgment on him is received. This is the judgment in which salvation lies. This is the judgment that will set him free. This is the judgment in which all things are freed with him. Time pauses as eternity comes near, and silence lies across the world that everyone may hear this judgment of the Son of God. Holy are you, eternal, free and whole, at peace forever in the heart of God. Where is the world and where is sorrow now?
Is this your judgment on yourself, teacher of God? Do you believe that this is wholly true? No, not yet, not yet. But this is still your goal, why you are here. It is your function to prepare yourself to hear this judgment and to recognize that it's true. One instant of complete belief in this, and you will go beyond belief to certainty. One instant out of time can bring time's end. Judge not, for you but judge yourself, and thus delay this final judgment. What is your judgment on the world, teacher of God? Have you yet learned to stand aside and hear the voice of judgment in yourself? Or do you still attempt to take his role from him? Learn to be quiet, for his voice is heard in stillness, and his judgment comes to all who stand aside in quiet listening and wait for him.
You who are sometimes sad and sometimes angry, who sometimes feel your just due is not given you, and your best efforts meet with lack of appreciation and even contempt, give up these foolish thoughts. They are too small and meaningless to occupy your holy mind an instant longer. God's judgment waits for you to set you free. What can the world hold out to you, regardless of your judgments on its gifts, that you would rather have? You will be judged, and judged in fairness and in honesty. There is no deceit in God. His promises are sure. Only remember that. His promises have guaranteed his judgment, and his alone will be accepted in the end. It is your function to make that end be soon. It is your function to hold it to your heart and offer it to all the world to keep it safe. All right, let's pause there and just talk about this section. And the question it poses to us, is each one to be judged in the end? And yes, and this is a happy yes. Notice the J, the capital J in judgment, and in case any of us are new to the course who are on the call or who are listening at a later date, when we see those capitalizations of certain words, that's referring to God, the Holy Spirit, truth. So judgment is another word here for the Holy Spirit because it's that capital J. And this is a happy judgment. We associate the word judgment with fear. But this is referring to the judgment of what is true. It's referring to that judgment of seeing with the eyes of the Holy Spirit, using that vision to look past what is false. Any comments or questions so far? One of the teachers who I've been reading some of her writing is lately is Liz Cronkite. She wrote a plain English translation of the entire Course in Miracles book. And she translated one of the beginning sentences, you cannot escape God's final judgment because you cannot run forever from truth. And that reminded me of a line that I read in another book, and I know I mentioned this last week, John Mundy. He says that the world is a hiding place from God. So we've turned our back on our inner guide. We do that all the time, but we also that's why we're here. That's also something that happened before we, you know, came into this world. And so God's judgment is going to come when we're ready with our whole mind to not deny love anymore, when we're ready to again be open to what is true. And the important point here is to remember that the Course teaches that we have a split mind. Part of our mind never left God, and part of our mind is here thinking that, you know, it's in this world, dreaming this dream. So we perceive ourselves in a world right now, but we're not really. And so God's loving judgment comes when we're ready to not perceive ourselves in the world anymore. We're preparing ourselves for love. I really like that sentence. It's your function to prepare yourself to hear this judgment and to recognize that it's true. Any comments or questions?
So do you suppose he'll say we're fabulous?
Absolutely.
that final judgment will be you're fabulous?
You rock. Yes. Yep, you are love and light and holiness and peace abide in you. That's God's final judgment.
That is such good news.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. I also really like the sentence, too. It's at the bottom of paragraph 2 where it says, Have you yet learned to stand aside and hear the voice of judgment in yourself, or do you still attempt to take his role from him? Learn to be quiet, for his voice is heard in stillness, and his judgment comes to all who stand aside in quiet listening. That just makes me think how we are constantly trying to do the Holy Spirit's job for him. We're the ones that take on the role of being the judger and, you know, the decider of how things need to be. And our task here is to learn that that doesn't make us happy, that you know, isn't what we want. So it's about letting the Holy Spirit do the Holy Spirit's job, and our taking that role of being a good listener. So I like that.
I just like this section so much because I see myself judging people and events, you know, in a way. I see it in a way that I wasn't seeing it, you know, a year ago. And it's just such a relief to know that I can give that to the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit's judgment is not the kind of judgment that I do. It's the judgment that says, is this love? Okay. If it's not love, it's not real. Let's go on to the next one. Okay. Is this love? And it's just so the opposite of what I do when I'm judging, which is try and protect myself or defend myself or, you know, look for some fear, you know. And it's just such a relief to know that in the end, yeah, God's telling me I'm fabulous, and it's just waiting for me to listen.
Yeah. That's great. You made me think of that saying that, you know, we were created in the image of the image and likeness of God, and we return the favor, meaning that, you know, so we then see God judging the way that we judge, and, you know,
right.
That's not how it is at all.
Right.
Thank goodness we're wrong.
You know, it's really the difference between the small mind and the mind of God when we're in that the small mind, that little, in, you know, the ego mind makes the judgments.
Yeah.
And, it's really to disregard that mind, to step back from it and just look at it and say, God wouldn't be thinking this.
Yeah, I really like, you just reminded me of Liz Cronkite refers to the ego as the personal mind. So if you think about that, and, you know, if we're thinking of our egos, like, and if you think of a personal mind, that's what we really have been aware of all along here is our personal mind, and that's the ego. That's how, you know, this is a place of egos, and so that, to me, has been a very nice little addition to understanding the ego, that it's a personal, it's thinking, like you said, that small mind, that personal mind, versus, you know, letting the thoughts of God come through us, the thoughts of the Holy Spirit, using the Holy Spirit's vision or mind. Nice. Well, shall we move on? Christy, I think you're up, right?
Okay. How should the teacher of God spend his day? To the advanced teacher of God, this question is meaningless. There is no program, for the lessons in the curriculum change each day. Yet he is sure of but one thing, that they do not change at random. Seeing this and understanding it is true, he rests content. He will be told all that his role should be this day and every day, and those who share that role with him will find him, so they can learn the lessons for the day together. Not one is absent whom he needs. Not one is sent without a learning goal already set and one which can be met that very day. For the advanced teacher of God, then, this question is superfluous. It has been asked and answered, and he keeps in constant contact with the answer. He is set and sees the road on which he walks stretched surely and smoothly before him.
But what about those who have not yet reached his certainty? They are not yet ready for such lack of understanding on their own part. What must they do to learn to give the day to God? There are some general rules which do apply, although each one must use them as best he can in his own way. Routines as such are dangerous because they easily become gods in their own right, threatening the very goals for which they were set up. Broadly speaking, then, it can be said that it is well to start the day right. It is always possible to begin again should the day begin with error. Yet there are obvious advantages in terms of saving time.
At the beginning, it is wise to think in terms of time. This is by no means the ultimate criterion, but at the outset, it is probably the simplest to observe. The saving of time is an essential early emphasis which, although it remains important throughout the learning process, becomes less and less emphasized. At the outset, we can safely say that time devoted to starting the day right does indeed save time. How much time should be so spent? This must depend on the teacher of God himself. He cannot claim that title until he has gone through the workbook, since we are learning within the framework of our course. After completion of the more structured practice periods which the workbook contains, individual need becomes the chief consideration.
This course is always practical. It may be that the teacher of God is not in a situation that fosters quiet thought as he awakes. If this is so, let him but remember that he chooses to spend time with God as soon as possible, and let him do so. Duration is not the major concern. One can easily sit still an hour with closed eyes and accomplish nothing. One can easily give God only an instant, and in that instant, join with him completely. Perhaps the one generalization that can be made is this. As soon as possible after waking, take your quiet time, continuing a minute or two after you begin to find it difficult. You may find that the difficulty will diminish and drop away. If not, that is the time to stop.
The same procedures should be followed at night. Perhaps your quiet time should be fairly early in the evening if it's not feasible for you to take it just before going to sleep. It is not wise to lie down for it. It is better to sit up in whatever position you prefer. Having gone through the workbook, you must have come to some conclusions in this respect. If possible, however, just before going to sleep is a desirable time to devote to God. It sets your mind into a pattern of rest and orients you away from fear. If it is expedient to spend this time earlier, at least be sure that you do not forget a brief period, not more than a moment will do, in which you close your eyes and think of God.
I'm actually going to pause us there because we still have a good, I'd say, 2 pages total. So let's talk halfway through this section, and then we'll keep reading. So this is cool. This gives us some very specific ideas as to how we could spend our day. And I like how it begins with saying that, you know, once we're practicing the course for a while, this question really is meaningless because our lessons change each day. And I'm curious to hear, you know, if anybody on the phone has just noticed that, whether you're doing the lessons, you know, for the first time or if you've done them already. The cool thing is that whatever changes happen, how it says, they don't happen at random. I love that. And the other line that really stands out to me, too, is that those who share that role with him will find him so they can learn the lessons for the day together. So with nothing being at random and, you know, our lessons changing throughout the day, that just makes me think that even when you're in traffic and, you know, you feel like flipping somebody off because they're cutting you off, you literally have come together with that person in an opportunity for a teaching learning situation. And so, again, in that moment, which teacher are you going to follow? Is it going to be the ego who's going to flip that bird, or is it going to be the Holy Spirit, where, you know, we turn our judgment perhaps over and ask for the miracle instead? I think that's really cool, and I'm also curious to hear if anybody has noticed about starting the day right, even with meditation in the morning, noticing how that impacts the rest of your day, whether or not it does. So any thoughts so far about what we've read?
I'm just curious, do we actually attract those people into our lives to learn these lessons? Does it kind of depend on where we're at? is that sort of the whole reason for even doing this work and you know, getting on a calm vibration, so that we don't have to.
So that we don't have to what?
Learn the lesson so intensely, maybe.
Right, right. Well, we always have that choice to be a happy learner, and yes, I mean, the Course is saying that there's no coincidences, there's no accidents. Everything is gently planned by one whose purpose is our only good, is what the Course says. And so, how the ego says too. I'm sorry. How the Course says that the ego wrote the script, that when it talks several times in the book about how the script is written, it can be really helpful to think of it as two scripts in a way. There's the ego script, which we know where that goes, and there's the script of the Holy Spirit. So our free will is that, which script are we going to follow? Are we going to be following the ego as our teacher or the Holy Spirit? So then there's no accidents. Everybody who comes to us is coming to us because, you know, Paula, as you might remember, Joseph used to say, you know, we send out a signal. There's a part of our, you know, subconscious that has agreed to go through this teaching learning situation with another, you know, individual. And so you come together with them to learn or have an opportunity to learn to choose love over fear. So yeah.
Yeah.
We,
that now you were used the word signal. To me, vibration seems to, because I just notice, you know, when I'm not relaxed and when I do feel stressed, that's when I seem to attract tailgaters and other things that annoy me more. So it's always like, let me step back from this. And
Yeah. And that's what comes with following the ego script when we're, in that place of stress, believing that we have to do this alone, believing that we are alone, believing that we are separate, however you want to say it, that's when we're calling forth all of the opportunities that the ego is presenting to us to say, see, this world is real, you know, this is all real, this is all really happening, you pulled off this separation. So,
wait, excuse me just one minute.
Oh, sure, no problem.
All right, let me mute this.
Paula has kitty cats who are troublemakers, I think. So anyway, any other thoughts about...
Is it talking about, like, people we attract, like, spur of the moment, or people that are in our lives like on a daily basis?
Both. There's an earlier part in the manual where it talks about even a, you know, a child bumping into an adult by chance. And it was saying, you know, by chance in quotes, meaning it's not a chance encounter. So it is talking about the people, you know, that are our life partners in terms of our lessons, like family members, friends, and it's also talking about, you know, acquaintances or people that we might even just pass on the street.
Yeah, because I live with my sister, and she's got her boyfriend here, and he kind of irritates me a little, you know, and he was just going off last night about politics, you know, and I mean, he was really, really stressed and aggravated, and I'm looking at me, like saying, did I attract that? You know? I don't understand.
If it's why. All, you know, the Course says, you know, this is all coming from us. So, yes, like there's an opportunity there for a willingness to ask to see with the Holy Spirit's vision or ask for the miracle instead of choosing the fear. And actually, we're going to read later tonight, and it's actually beginning in this section that we're in about magic and magic thoughts, which I think is going to be a good thing that will kind of address what it is that you're talking about, because it has to do with when we get
I mean, he didn't upset me or anything. You know, it's just the way he was acting, you know.
And
you know, my sister, she saw it too, and then she called me this morning to apologize for his behavior, you know. I'm like, well, it didn't really bother me, but, you know, then that made me think, you know, did I attract something there?
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't, it makes you think, you know, and I've never, like, stopped and thought like that before, you know, and now I'm starting to do that, you know, like, why was I just involved in that, you know, and
And the Course is teaching us that, you know, what we're seeing out there is coming from our minds. So if we are, you know, seeing that person go into, you know, that judgment or whatever that place is that we're seeing that they're at, that's because we have that in our minds as well. So, so yeah, it all becomes an opportunity for learning.
Right.
I'm wondering if anybody has noticed this whole idea of starting the day outright with spending time with God, spending some quiet time, even if it's just a moment. I thought of all of you who have, you know, children perhaps that when probably the moment you wake up, it's just not necessarily conducive to quiet time. It mentioned that in one of these later paragraphs. So it talks even about how just a few moments count. And I'm wondering if anybody has noticed that when they spend the beginning of the day to get quiet, if you feel the effects throughout the day. Because I know I sure do.
I absolutely do.
Yeah, definitely. And I have three kids, but these days, the moment I wake up, it's my first thought, you know, I'm here to be love today. Show me, you know, let me be a channel. And it has changed everything for me. Not, it just hasn't just had small effects. It's just, yesterday I noticed it really clearly that there wasn't any reason I should be having such a good day, but I was, and it was all connected to that first thought.
Yeah, beautiful. I've noticed it so many times when I feel like I got to wake up and just start going and getting things done, that when I stop and take, even if it's just a few minutes, that suddenly my whole day just seems easy, like you said. And there's maybe no reason that it should be feeling easy, but it's easy. It's flowing. So very nice. Well, why don't we keep reading? Okay, so we left off on paragraph 6, right? And I think I'm up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There is one thought in particular that should be remembered throughout the day. It is a thought of pure joy, a thought of peace, a thought of limitless release, limitless because all things are freed within it. You think you made a place of safety for yourself. You think you made a power that can save you from all the fearful things you see in dreams. It is not so. Your safety lies not there. What you give up is merely the illusion of protecting illusions. And it is this you fear, and only this. How foolish to be so afraid of nothing. Nothing at all. Your defenses will not work, but you are not in danger. You have no need of them. Recognize this, and they will disappear. And only then will you accept your real protection.
How simply and how easily does the day slip by for the teacher of God who has accepted his protection. All that he did before in the name of safety no longer interests him, for he is safe and knows it to be so. He has a guide who will not fail. He need make no distinctions among the problems he perceives, for he to whom he turns with all of them recognizes no order of difficulty in resolving them. He is as safe in the present as he was before illusions were accepted into his mind, and as he will be when he has let them go. There is no difference in his state at different times and different places, because they are all one to God. This is his safety, and he has no need for more than this.
Yet there will be temptations along the way the teacher of God has yet to travel, and he has need of reminding himself throughout the day of his protection. How can he do this, particularly during the time when his mind is occupied with external things? He can but try, and his success depends on his conviction that he will succeed. He must be sure success is not of him, but will be given him at any time, in any place and circumstance he calls for it. There are times his certainty will waver, and the instant this occurs, he will return to earlier attempts to place reliance on himself alone. Forget not this is magic, and magic is a sorry substitute for true assistance. It is not good enough for God's teacher because it is not enough for God's son.
The avoidance of magic is the avoidance of temptation, for all temptation is nothing more than the attempt to substitute another will for God's. These attempts may indeed seem frightening, yet they are merely pathetic. They can have no effects, neither good nor bad, neither rewarding nor demanding sacrifice, healing nor destructive, quieting nor fearful. When all magic is recognized as merely nothing, the teacher of God has reached the most advanced state. All intermediate lessons will but lead to this and bring this goal nearer to recognition. For magic of any kind in all its forms simply does nothing. Its powerlessness is the reason it can be so easily escaped. What has no effects can hardly terrify.
There is no substitute for the will of God. In simple statement, it is to this fact that the teacher of God devotes his day. Each substitute he may accept as real, but can deceive him. But he is safe from all deception if he so decides. Perhaps he needs to remember, God is with me, I cannot be deceived. Perhaps he prefers other words, or only one, or none at all. Yet each temptation to accept magic as true must be abandoned through his recognition, not that it is fearful, not that it is sinful, not that it is dangerous, but merely that it is meaningless. Rooted in sacrifice and separation, two aspects of one error, and no more, he merely chooses to give up all that he never had. And for this sacrifice is heaven restored to his awareness.
Is not this an exchange that you would want? The world would gladly make it if it knew that it could be made. It is God's teachers who must teach it that it can. And so it is their function to make sure that they have learned it. No risk is possible throughout the day except to put your trust in magic, for it is only this that leads to pain. There is no will but God's. His teachers know that this is so and have learned that everything but this is magic. All belief in magic is maintained by just one simple-minded illusion, that it works. All through his training, every day and hour, and even every minute and second, must God's teachers learn to recognize the forms of magic and perceive their meaninglessness. Fear is withdrawn from them, and so they go. And thus the gate of heaven is reopened, and its light can shine again on an untroubled mind.
Beautiful. All right. So the second section, well, not even second, set of paragraphs that we just read tonight talks about magic. And I will say that I didn't fully grasp what this is talking about for a long time because I think of magic tricks, you know, but that's literally almost what this is saying. And this is saying that the Course is referring to magic as being any attempt that we do that is, we're just relying on our small selves. We turn back to relying on our egos rather than relying on the Holy Spirit. And there are countless examples of magic in this sense of, you know, what the Course would say is magic in this world. And just a few examples that came to mind for me in reading this, you know, magic is the belief that our safety lies in green paper strips and piles of metal discs. That's from the Course. It's talking about money. A belief in magic is believing, and again, this is wording from the Course, that fluid pushed through our veins, pushed into our veins through a sharpened needle can ward off disease and death. So it's saying literally that our you know, thinking that taking a pill is actually going to heal us is magic. Because it's something outside of ourselves. And it says in here specifically, it's not, where was it? It's not that it's bad or dangerous to do that, but it's simply as we remove more and more blocks to love, we come to realize that this is actually meaningless, that everything outside of us has no effect really on true healing. So more examples of magic too is just, again, a general belief that you're doing it yourself. I will share that when I was reading this earlier today, and I've been doing a lot of preparation for a couple of classes that I'm teaching, and then I like to, you know, just prepare a little bit for these calls. And I am constantly lapping into this thought that I'm doing this, that I have to get it together. I have to organize it. I have to, you know, I have to make sure it sounds okay. And that's a belief in magic. That's a belief that I think that I need to do it versus stepping back and letting the Holy Spirit lead the way and instead working to be a good listener. So those are just some examples of magic that I thought might help. Again, it's just a belief in anything, that anything outside of ourselves has a real effect. And when it seems to, that's kind of like that magic trick that I referenced earlier.
I think it goes back to what we were talking about last week, the fact that I don't know. You know, I need do nothing.
Right. I need do nothing of my small self. I need do nothing alone. I like that. Other thoughts about this?
It really makes a space for the Holy Spirit to work through you.
Yeah, it really does. Just having that tiny bit of willingness. I don't even remember what I was anguishing about a day or so ago, although it probably has to do with all the preparation that I've been doing. And I kept saying, you know, to the Holy Spirit, you know, you say we just need the tiniest bit of willingness, like that's it, and I have that. So show me, you know, show me what you got. Here's my willingness. And it's funny that I can't even remember what I was upset about. So obviously I've moved on. But I also wanted to say, too, that I really like the sentence where it says that it's in paragraph 7, line 6, that we're as safe in the present right now as we were before we accepted illusions into our mind, and we're as safe now as we will be when we let them go. It says there's no difference in his state at different times and different places because they're all one to God. And that sentence right there, that there's no difference in our safety no matter where we are in the world, if we're up in a plane or on the ground or out on a boat, that was actually a part of the course that really helped me when I was really struggling with having to fly. I used to not dig getting on airplanes at all. So that whole idea of being safe no matter where you are was very, very comforting to me.
That was always a very big one for me, that when I first started doing the Course in Miracles, that to me, because I had such a fear of actually harm avoidance, you know, I was always afraid of that I was going to be injured or hurt or something bad was going to happen to me, and I never felt safe in this world, and that was the main thing about the course that struck me, you know, that I'm safe no matter where I go. It opened a whole new world for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I can travel now in perfect peace. It's a wonderful thing.
That's beautiful. I love that lesson. Specifically, the lesson is, I am in danger nowhere in the world.
Yeah.
That's an awesome one. Yeah, that's really cool. Anyone else?
Corinne, this is Claudie. I wanted to...
Hey.
I wanted to add something.
Great.
I'm sorry, it's like, I feel like I'm going to backpedal, but just because I was having some issues with my phone. So,
I'm so glad to hear you. I was like, what happened to Claudie?
Yeah, I was wondering.
I got booted off, and then when I tried to come back on, I couldn't unmute myself, and I was trying to ask somebody online, like, can you please ask what to do? But I think it was my phone. So, anyway, finally I managed to get back on. So, what I really wanted to share is, and I apologize, because I was getting on and off, I couldn't pick up who was the one talking, but someone was asking about a situation, about what they were feeling, and they were talking about whether they had attracted the situation or not, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Mentioning that. So there's this beautiful quote that I remember recently I was asking Corinne to give it to me, and I couldn't find it in the book myself, and then actually Gabby ended up posting it, and we were like, oh, we were just talking about that quote. But the quote in A Course says, this is what it says, "I am responsible for what I see. I choose the feelings I experience, and I decide upon the goal I would achieve. And everything that happens to me, I ask for, and I receive as I have asked." So I know for myself, I kind of get back to this quote whenever I feel a sense of, like, why is this happening? And, like, why is this person doing this to me? You know, whenever I get kind of in that feeling of things, I kind of remind myself of this quote. And I think I know for myself in past experience, what sometimes can happen is that denial might be a strong word, but I feel like I'm not able to recognize what is really bothering me about what that person is saying. So I know, for instance, for me, a huge lesson in forgiveness has been my perception of people that have religious beliefs because of my growing up and because what I went through in my journey. So for a long time, when people would bring up things to do with religion, I would feel myself internally get worked up. But sometimes I would feel this thing like, oh, you know, that's not really getting to me. It was whatever. But I would bring it up. Like, I would tell someone, oh, yeah, this person said this, but it didn't really bother me. And then, you know, I had to come to a place where I realized, you know, something about that really actually really did bother me. Because it seems silly that it would bother me, but the truth of the matter, it did. You know, something about it, obviously I still had more healing to do. So, I mean, it was just a moment where I was able to realize, okay, something, even if I don't get what about this is bothering me, I'm asking for it. And I'm asking for it in order to give it up, you know, like in order to release it, in order to have my healing, in order to receive the atonement, in order to experience my miracle. So that's, I think that's always a beautiful quote that reminds me that, yes, you know, whatever I'm experiencing at any given moment, my mind has chosen that for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. That is just so, there's so many, like every page, there's something so radical. It's just to imagine that. You are actually never a victim. That's just so radical. And then to imagine that there is no chance that everything happens for a reason, that just, you know, those are kind of the thoughts that just blow your mind wide open.
Yeah. The Course does blow your mind right open.
Yeah.
I like how you describe that. And Clary, thank you for that quote. That's a fantastic quote, and it's perfect for what we were talking about.
Yeah.
It's really, really helpful. Cool. Should we keep reading? If nobody has anything else to add, I will take that as a yes.
Yeah.
okay, good. So we'll see how far we get through this because we have about 13 minutes left. And this is actually a pretty big one, in my opinion, at least. Okay, so we're on how do God's teachers deal with magic thoughts? And Christy, is it you or me?
I think it's you.
Okay, I think you're right. All right, how do God's teachers deal with magic thoughts? This is a crucial question both for teacher and pupil. If this issue is mishandled, the teacher of God has hurt himself and has also attacked his pupil. This strengthens fear and makes the magic seem quite real to both of them. How to deal with magic thus becomes a major lesson for the teacher of God to master. His first responsibility in this is not to attack it. If a magic thought arouses anger in any form, God's teacher can be sure that he is strengthening his own belief in sin and has condemned himself. He can be sure as well that he has asked for depression, pain, fear, and disaster to come to him. Let him remember then that it is not this that he would teach, because it is not this that he would learn.
There is, however, a temptation to respond to magic in a way that reinforces it, nor is this always obvious. It can, in fact, be easily concealed beneath a wish to help. It is this double wish that makes the help of little value and must lead to undesired outcomes. Nor should it be forgotten that the outcomes that result will always come to teacher and to pupil. How many times has it been emphasized that you give but to yourself? And where could this be better shown than in the kinds of help that the teacher gives to those who need his aid? Here is his gift most clearly given him, for he will give only what he has chosen for himself, and in this gift is his judgment upon the Holy Son of God.
It is easiest to let error be corrected where it is most apparent, and errors can be recognized by their results. A lesson truly taught can lead to nothing but release for teacher and pupil who have shared in one intent. Attack can enter only if perception of separate goals has entered, and this must indeed have been the case if the result is anything but joy. The single aim of the teacher turns the divided goal of the pupil into one direction, with the call for help becoming his one appeal. This, then, is easily responded to with just one answer, and this answer will enter the teacher's mind unfailingly. From there, it shines into his pupil's mind, making it one with his.
Perhaps it will be helpful to remember that no one can be angry at a fact. It is always an interpretation that gives rise to negative emotions, regardless of their seeming justification by what appears as facts. Regardless, too, of the intensity of the anger that is aroused. It may be merely slight irritation, perhaps too mild to be even clearly recognized, or it may also take the form of intense rage accompanied by thoughts of violence, fantasied or apparently acted out. It does not matter. All of these reactions are the same. They obscure the truth, and this can never be a matter of degree. Either truth is apparent or it is not. It cannot be partially recognized. Who is unaware of truth must look upon illusions.
Anger in response to perceived magic thoughts is a basic cause of fear. Consider what this reaction means, and its centrality in the world's thought system becomes apparent. A magic thought, by its mere presence, acknowledges a separation from God. It states in the clearest form possible that the mind which believes it has a separate will that can oppose the will of God also believes it can succeed. That this can hardly be a fact is obvious, yet that it can be believed as fact is equally obvious. And herein lies the birthplace of guilt. Who usurps the place of God and takes it for himself now has a deadly enemy, and he must stand alone in his protection and make himself a shield to keep him safe from fury that can never be abated and vengeance that can never be satisfied.
How can this unfair battle be resolved? Its ending is inevitable, for its outcome must be death. How then can one believe in one's defenses? Magic again must help. Forget the battle. Accept it as a fact and then forget it. Do not remember the impossible odds against you. Do not remember the immensity of the enemy, and do not think about your frailty in comparison. Accept your separation, but do not remember how it came about. Believe that you have won it, but do not retain the slightest memory of who your great opponent really is. Projecting your forgetting onto him, it seems to you he has forgotten too.
But what will now be your reaction to all magic thoughts? They can but reawaken sleeping guilt, which you have hidden but have not let go. Each one says clearly to your frightened mind, you have usurped the place of God. Think not he has forgotten. Here we have the fear of God most starkly represented, for in that thought has guilt already raised madness to the throne of God himself. And now there is no hope except to kill. Here is salvation now. An angry father pursues his guilty son, kill or be killed, for here alone is choice. Beyond this there is none, for what was done cannot be done without. The stain of blood can never be removed, and anyone who bears this stain on him must meet with death.
Into this hopeless situation, God sends his teachers. They bring the light of hope from God himself. There is a way in which escape is possible. It can be learned and taught, but it requires patience and abundant willingness. Given that, the lesson's manifest simplicity stands out like an intense white light against a black horizon. For such it is. If anger comes from an interpretation and not a fact, it is never justified. Once this is even dimly grasped, the way is open. Now it is possible to take the next step. The interpretation can be changed at last. Magic thoughts need not lead to condemnation, for they do not really have the power to give rise to guilt, and so they can be overlooked and thus forgotten in the truest sense.
Madness but seems terrible. In truth, it has no power to make anything. Like the magic which becomes its servant, it neither attacks nor protects. To see it and to recognize its thought system is to look on nothing. Can nothing give rise to anger? Hardly so. Remember then, teacher of God, that anger recognizes a reality that is not there, yet is the anger certain witness that you do believe in it as fact. Now is escape impossible until you see you have responded to your own interpretation, which you have projected on an outside world. Let this grim sword be taken from you now. There is no death. The sword does not exist. The fear of God is causeless, but his love is cause of everything beyond all fear and thus forever real and always true. All right, so this section is dense and it also has a lot in it, a lot of, I feel, even earlier, you know, understandings of the Course or a broader understanding of the Course to get what this is saying. And if you feel like your eyes were crossing and you were zoning out and you don't even know what question to ask because this was kind of so, you know, ununderstandable, that's totally, totally okay. So I'm going to just give a short little breakdown, and I want to give an example. So to begin, let's say that, you know, we're cool with the idea that the Course teaches that this world isn't real. We've studied the Course enough to have a certain sense of understanding and kind of, you know, believing this, acknowledging it, whatever word you want to use, that we are okay with this idea that the world is an illusion and that, you know, we have that willingness to practice these principles. So then put us in a situation with somebody who maybe doesn't do the Course, and let's say that person sees something horrible on the news, starts ranting about politics, or better yet, you know, I'll give you a personal example of a time when I was with a friend and we saw a wild animal with a healed injury. It's an animal that, you know, hangs around my neck of the woods, and they're injured, but it's a healed injury, so they're frolicking just fine. And this person that I'm with gets very upset at what they're seeing and just really feels compelled that they have to do something to help, that this animal has got to be suffering, and, you know, this person comes up with a plan to help this creature. And Corinne gets annoyed because I want to say to that person, for example, you know, well, this isn't real. Like, you know, take that, what you see, and hand that to the Holy Spirit. And this is, you know, what you should do. So I'm definitely in touch with the fact that there's some irritation in me. And whether it's the slightest flicker of irritation or if it's an all-out rage, the Course is saying that there's no difference, that anger is anger. So what I do is settle on a more, like, subtle statement, and I end up saying to that person under my breath, you know, you're projecting. And I don't try to, you know, impose the Course on them. But what has happened here with getting angry, that's an example of me getting mad at somebody else's magic thoughts. So their magic thoughts are that, you know, this animal is real, it is separate from us, and it is suffering, versus, again, that willingness to hand that animal over to the Holy Spirit and see the love beyond it. So this is my example of getting mad at somebody else's magic thinking, and this is my mistake, because, you know, it talked in here about, you know, the appearance of helpfulness, where, oh, I want to help this person understand this from a Course perspective, so, you know, so they'll get it. But what this is really more of an attack, because, again, I felt that anger, and I'm coming from that place of thinking that this person should not be thinking the way that they're thinking. So I know enough then that all solutions in the world are really going to be just Band-Aids, that we could run and try to help this animal, but and that might be what we feel compelled to do. There's nothing wrong with that at all if that's what we feel guided to do, so I want to make that clear. The real solution is going to come through me from the Holy Spirit, whatever that solution is going to be. But again, instead I'm getting irritated at this person and not listening to the Holy Spirit. So what has this done? This is where my anger, and I hope this is, I'm saying this clearly because it's a tough one. My anger indicates that I still believe that the world is real too. Otherwise, I would have overlooked with the Holy Spirit, you know, the animal's problem, my friend's reaction to see the love beyond the picture. So it's like I inserted my judgment again. My ego got in there, and the ego is insidious. It'll find a way in. So that's where this situation is my mistake. So that's really what this section is talking about, with how do we deal with magical thinking, magical thoughts. Our first task is to learn how to not get angry at them. So I hope that was clear, because again, this is, I think, a pretty dense section. So comments or questions so far?
This one line that says, if anger comes from an interpretation and not a fact, it is never justified.
We're always interpreting, yep.
Yeah, and we're always trying to justify why we think we're right about these things. And
mm-hmm.
It never works.
Right.
It never, ever works.
Right.
But we keep doing it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it keeps that persona alive. You know, it keeps us in the body. It keeps the separation going. And it's a mistake. But,
yep.
You know, so it's if I can just remember, I don't have to justify any of it. Just let me reach for a better thought so that I can feel better. You know,
right.
God's
Holy Spirit,
will for
yep.
us is happiness.
Yeah.
It's happiness. We are meant to be happy on this planet and
mm-hmm,
do
mm-hmm.
His will.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I just noticed that we are at the top of the hour, but I just want to add one more thing about this section because, again, it's a big one. And this is, again, getting more hardcore with A Course in Miracles, that the Course teaches that we have unconscious guilt for believing that we really turned our backs on God. And this unconscious guilt is also, you know, because we're afraid that God is going to punish us for seemingly, you know, pulling off this separation, for turning our backs on God. We're afraid of punishment. And again, from Liz Cronkite's book, magic thoughts are another way of thinking of ego thoughts. And these ego thoughts, these magic thoughts, acknowledge the separation from God simply by their presence. And the Course in this section that we just read touched on that, that just by the presence of those magic thoughts in that other person or in us, that just by their presence, they acknowledge what we think we did in turn, thinking that we turned our backs on God, and that reawakens our sleeping guilt. So that also is an explanation as to why those magical thoughts can rouse anger. So again, that's getting pretty deep with the Course, but I just wanted to throw that in there before we end our call, because we'll be moving on next week. So before we conclude, any final questions, comments, reflections, insights?
Will we continue where we left off next week?
Yes, next week we'll start up on section 18.
Yeah, how is the correction made?
Correct.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you so much, everyone who joined us. Thank you, Christy, for reading. Thank you, Clary, for being here. I'm sorry you got bumped off. And we'll see everyone next week.
Bye.
Okay,
have a great week.
Thanks so much.
You.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.